I'm Kari Anderson, joined by Steve Klimowski, who is the Artistic Director, Executive Director of the Vermont Contemporary Music Ensemble, and poet David Huddle, who is here. And your poems are serving as the inspiration for a concert of all new works that the VCME is putting on this weekend. So, Steve, let's start with you. How many years have you been doing this project now?
This project started really 5 years ago. We had picked out several small pieces, and we're working them up, and we're trying to put together a program of continuous music with no applause between. We were experimenting with programming then. At the last minute, 3 weeks before the program, Dennis Kitts, who was sort of in on the first project with me, and I were discussing it, and we said, wouldn't it be great if we had a poet to put in a poem between all of these small pieces? We immediately thought of David Budbill, who does a lot of reading and reading with music. And David answered the call. He was free on the dates that our concerts were, and he came up with several of his Judevine poems. Now, the following year, I thought, let's do the opposite. Let's pick a poet. Let's have that poet pick, say, 10 poems, and then commission composers to write music, just short pieces, in response to the poems.
Now, David, had you ever had your music, or had your poetry, rather, represented musically before? Has any of your poems been set to music, or is this a first for you?
It's not the first time, but it's the first time that there's been any real connection with it. In the past, the composer has read the poem and then gone off and composed his piece and then sent me a tape recording of the piece. And so I would listen to it, but I had no real sense of connection with him or with the music. So I sat in on a rehearsal yesterday of the piece that is connected to the fifth section of this poem that I'm doing. And I heard the music and was right with, as close to the musicians as I am to you. And I felt something remarkable sort of passing between us that I will still be investigating in my mind, I'm sure, for months after this.
The concept is it's not singers. It's pure music and pure poetry. So what is it about having your words be expressed in a way that is completely nonverbal?
It is, it's remarkable. It's a little bit spiritual, I'll have to say, in the sense that you're receiving something that you don't really, you're not completely equipped to interpret. But in this case, since I know the poem and then I'm hearing the composition, I'm hearing connections with it. But I should confess to you that I've been a music addict since I was probably even before birth. My father was a bit of a musician, and when I was in high school, I wanted to be a band director, and now I am one of the great Vermont in-the-car singers along with the... So it has always meant a great deal to me. I'm one of those people who sometimes stops a car to weep beside the road because of what I'm hearing. So I'm no stranger to music and what it does. And it, I guess I would say, I think I am equipped to have a very strong response to the compositions that I'm going to hear.
Well, David, you have a special treat for us today. We're going to hear one of your poems that is the inspiration for a piece of music that'll be on these concerts.
This poem is called The Husband's Tale, and it has an epigraph or a little piece of writing before it starts. And this was from my friend John Ingalls, a poet who wrote a piece called Adam's Signing, in which he imagines Adam and Eve making signs to each other. So his lines are, the difficult signs for flight, for danger, as well as the simpler one for love. 1. I know what they say. It was her silence I married her for. They've got it right. She's never spoken. She has no voice box, so she can't even hum to herself. Yes, she can write. Her elegant hand can fly across a page, every sentence crackling with intelligence and passion for life, the world and its creatures, books, art, music. And when she signs, people gather around her as if her hands and fingers reveal how we came to be here, what we must do with our lives, and what happens after we die. No matter, they can't read her gestures. They want what I want, to listen anyway. 2. 40 years we've been companions, a long, intricate dance begun the day we met. In high school, someone said, "That new girl can't talk," and I went to see her for myself. So her stillness was the first fact I knew about her. Her looks were ordinary. No one said she was pretty, but her face had a kind of power. Kids got quiet around her, and if she looked straight at you, it could make you shiver. She and I locked eyes that first day, and nowadays we joke that was the moment we made our wedding vows. She was voted our commencement speaker. Beside her, I read her speech, sounded her words. 3. Never a man, but when women see us together, their faces say it. They suspect a talking husband with a silent wife, like it's a new sexual perversion. They might not be wrong. When Ruth Ann and I make love, it's the words I say that excite her, the flutter and caress of her hands and fingers that move me along with her. Is this too intimate? Well, there you have it. The other side of power is a cool, secret place, a meadow where two can go to lie down in smooth grass, to spend hours, a fingertip brushing along the skin inside a wrist. Just you, whispered like, amen. 4. Yes, children, and yes, they must have suffered difficulty and embarrassment they never even told us about. Schoolmates with hands over their mouths mocking Ruth Ann, exaggerating the long stare at a face that's become my habit. Robert is oldest, Michelle only a year younger. They're sweet kids and never told us of any trouble we might have caused them. Schools where you find out how the world views your parents. They brought home friends, and the friends watched us. We know they had their thoughts, but somehow we passed inspection. Once we even chaperoned a school dance, danced the jitterbug for them, but just once. 5. Once, furious, her hands seemed to explode. You use silent against me, it's not fair. I must have blinked because her mouth opened like that agonized person's in Monk's The Scream, and she made the same sound the painting makes, none whatsoever. It was just so eerie. Married a few years, we suddenly saw that navigating love all right didn't mean we could handle fear and rage. I don't know how I knew to do this. Don't remember deciding to do it. Just knew to drop straight to the floor, kneel, hug her knees, bury my head and say, I'm so sorry. When I looked up, she smiled and signed, keep talking. 6. My worst fear was she'd be hurt somewhere near and I'd be oblivious. More and more, I'd go check on her wherever I thought she was, gardening, ironing, watching TV. I got so I could do it without her noticing. Just a glance from a window or through a door. But in the course of years, I realized she knew almost every time, but pretended not to notice. What this says about marriage or the two of us, I don't know. But once when she sat reading in the backyard sunlight, I passed the porch door like a ghost spying on a statue, then stepped back and caught that slight to herself grin. 7. Gardening would be only the general term for what she did with flowers, trees, rocks, water, grass, shrubs, even daylight and shadow. It took years for me to see how the odd little pieces of land around our house had evolved into a park for ghosts or angels, or maybe it was outsider art for a few discerning pedestrians who could recognize arrangements she'd changed dozens of times. Buried hoses made fountains, one that washed down a rock face into a pool lined with stones she'd found, a miniature grotto with a bench beneath soft Chinese chimes that called, "Come, sit down in paradise." 8. One more won't hurt. Saying it swung open the door to Le Bon Temps, and Ruth Ann Tipsy was funnier than a dozen speaking women. "You're slurring your words," I'd tell her, and she'd gesture gibberish and cross her eyes. Oh, we said it a lot in those years, before the night I hip-checked her across the kitchen and broke her wrist. What had seemed only giddy pleasure turned in that instant to a drunken husband, me, abusing his disadvantaged wife, Ruth Ann, waking their sleeping kids with his violent act. Right hand in a cast. The left didn't feel like talking, and our sad silence a jail. 9. One Monday morning at Dunkin' Donuts, I realized I was pointing at what I wanted. I actually forced myself to say thank you to the woman counting change into my palm. I sat in the car a long while thinking about when I had last spoken aloud, as if they were someone else's, my hands signed Friday afternoon at work. Kids away at school, with the house to ourselves, Ruth Ann and I, without ever agreeing it was what we wanted, had given ourselves over to silence. Or maybe released it from the basement, attic, and closets, treated it like a guest.